Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh no,
how would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and Off Air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Everyone, welcome to The Ruck, the rugby podcast from The Times and The Sunday Times. And Happy New Year. Welcome to 2024. I'm Alfie Reynolds and on location with Will Kelleher, Alex Lowe. How are you, gents?
It's time warp.
It is a time warp for this episode, our first episode of 2024 in Will Kelleher's flat, Alex, which
is
very nice.
Very good. Very good. I noticed that.
I'm nervous.
I was looking at their decanters. And Will's hit his rum rather quicker than his girlfriend's drunk her whiskey.
That is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. I just need to update it with a new bottle. I think that's the thing. That's my resolution for 24. Get more rum.
I have utter faith in you to be able to achieve that goal.
We should tell the listeners at this point, don't ring in. You still may be charged. You know, it's a pre-recorded show.
Exactly. Yes. So with the fixtures or the kind of dates over the festive period this year means that we are pre-recording our New Year episode, our look back on 2023 ahead of time. So coming up in this episode, we're going to name, or Will and Alex are going to name, their starting 15 of the year. We've also got an interview with an up-and-coming player, England under 20 Northampton Saints back rower Henry Pollock. He made his Premiership debut in the East Midlands Derby fairly recently, so there's a little chat with him. And then also we've got a few individual awards as well that we'll do at the end. So a mixed bag for you, a little look ahead to 2024, a big look back at 2023. And I think we'll start with Team of the Year. Are we good to go?
Yeah, so should we lay some ground rules?
Yes,
yeah,
so I've got a few questions for you both here as well.
How many hipster picks are we allowed?
Yeah, well, that could be a rule.
As many as you like, yeah. The more the merrier, I think, in all honesty. So it's interesting. So if we're naming a starting 15, how heavy a weighting or all the weighting goes towards the World Cup? That's always, I think, an interesting discussion in a World Cup year.
So here's my talking through of it. There's obviously a recency bias, isn't there? Because we've come back from the World Cup and South Africa won it. And so there's probably going to be quite a lot of South Africans who have made it who wouldn't have been it before. And things like Ireland winning the Grand Slam may have been slightly forgotten because it firstly happened earlier in the year. Secondly, they then didn't get through to the semis and beyond of the World Cup. And that's sort of fine, I think. It's a bit like the rankings, isn't it? Double points in World Cup year. That's what the sport's all about, isn't it? Performing at World Cup. So it's okay that the South Africans, people like Andre Pollard, for example, who maybe didn't have the greatest 2023 as an entire year, but then kicked every single goal at the World Cup. That's quite a big tariff for
him. Yeah, I think there's a big weighting on the World Cup. Not just from some of the fun picks from some of the emerging nations. We'll all have our favourite Fijian players and
Portuguese
players.
Samoans.
But for the major nations. I think winning a Grand Slam has cachet, and I think it's easy to forget how good Ireland were in the Six Nations. And when we're in the Six Nations, we always say this is everything. Winning a Grand Slam is within that context everything. It's so much bigger than winning the title. So much bigger than winning the title, but it's not as big as the World Cup. So for me, there is a huge weighting towards the World Cup because it's the biggest stage there is, but can't forget the Grand Slam.
Shall I run us through who we picked last year?
Yeah, do you want to
go? It's quite interesting.
Run us through the 15.
So our 15 last year was Cyril Bailly, Julian Marchand, Tadhg Furlong, Eben Etzebeth, Tadhg Byrne, Surveyor van der Vlier, Aldry, and we, I think, allow the Times listeners to choose which order in the back row those three would be. Then we had Dupont and Sexton, Donty and Fiku, all French midfield, and then Penno, Emiliano Buffelli, and Willie LaRue as a fullback. So Buffelli, I think, was because he kicked loads of goals, beat England, had a really good year. But he was possibly the most hipster pick.
Interesting. There we go. Well, I'll tell you what, let's kick things off then, shall we? And let's start in the forwards. And I don't think there's a better place to start in terms of 2023, and in particular the World Cup, than the front row and where we're going here. What do you reckon?
I've got the 15 names that I think should be in. And I think all of it is really reflective of what we kind of said at the end of the World Cup. Of, we got the World Cup and the final that maybe the year of rugby deserved or merited by the fact that no scrum, no win came back in a major way in 2023. So my loose head is going to be Oxenche, but I'm happy for it to be Kitsoff if people want to bend me the other way. A bit like Oxenche has done to people in scrums, yeah. But yeah, I just think he didn't play millions of tests, he didn't play millions of minutes, but he was so impactful in all of them.
He's a great example of World Cup waiting meaning a lot. The impact that he made at the biggest moments on the biggest stage demand selection. And it, you know, do we like the idea of seven forwards coming off the bench? Do, you know, that whole thing is up for debate. The idea of a 23-man squad doesn't sit comfortably with lots of people because, you know, as we said through the World Cup, a team like South Africa, certainly up front, you've got to beat them twice. As England found, they beat them once for about 50 minutes and then couldn't go again. But that's the depth that, that the Springboks have. And their biggest weapon of those seven forwards that would come on was Oxenche. He was a match winning loose head prop. It was interesting, your piece, your interview, no, your big scrum props investigation report, reports, by the way of putting it, that David Flatman called Joe Marler the best loose head prop in the world.
Bar none, he said they wouldn't have anyone ahead of him.
Yeah. I saw him last week in Racing, and it was one of those games that was so fast paced he came off after about 55. He loves being part of those games. He just, as he says himself, He doesn't survive very long in them, but he's playing the best rugby he's ever played, I think. It's great for England that he's available, I think, because they need experience. So it's great that he's part of the conversation, although I'm not sure he's going to win our vote.
No, I think we're happy with Oxenche, aren't we, from what you both said?
Yeah, come on, go on the Ox.
Lock him in. Let's go to the other side of the scrum. We'll come to Hooker in just a second, but on the tight head side, is it Frans Malherbe?
So he was our three from last year, and I'm going to say the same point I made last year.
Was he in, sorry?
Yeah, he made it last year, yeah. I think it sort of fundamentally comes down to what you want, doesn't it? Because I think Al Dimmock was on our podcast last year, and he said he could pick you the fun front row or the scrum them to death front row. Yeah. And in the scrum them to death front row was obviously Frans Malherbe. And the stats with him, the 2019 World Cup final, he made one carry for 0 metres. And in the 2023 World Cup final, he made three carries for 1 metre. However, he is the most important, almost the most important Springbok out there, isn't he? And I said it last year, but I just quite enjoy the fact that you can have a guy who looks a bit like a pudding, hunts for biltong in the wild, shoots kudu and all that, and just scrum. And like people's entire game plans have had to change because he is so good at scrummaging. And England held, they picked Dan Cole and Joe Marler to hold him.
Yeah.
And they amazingly did. And then it went to pot when Gendzin Sinkler came on and Oxenche sent them through like a wave, didn't he, in one of those scrums. If tight head earns you the big bucks, he should be paid a hell of a lot of money, Frans Malherbe.
Tyrrell Lomax from New Zealand, I think, coming through, has had a big year for them. Who else? Tyke Furlong's had better years.
Lala was the other one that the All Blacks picked him purposefully for the box, and their scrum was great in the World Cup final.
And actually, I think it's important to, in the same way we did with Marler, to give honourable mention to the New Zealand front row, because actually that them getting to the World Cup final, the improvement in their front five, in particular that front row, I think was a massive part of that. So it's worth us mentioning that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think so. Malherbe and Che, we happy with? Yeah,
well,
props?
Can I just? He's not my nomination because I've been very clear on who I want as my three, but I want to mention Luke Tangi, the Fijian tight head, who actually, on the stats from Opta, had the most carries per test of any test tight head in 2023. 8.73 carries a game. More than Sinkler, more than Ben Tamifuna. And we mentioned it, I think, at the World Cup, but
Didn't you describe him as jelly?
A bit jelly-ish, yeah. But it was the slow-mo, so he took a tap and go, didn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
It was either against Australia or Portugal, maybe Australia, or Georgia, actually, maybe. It was in the pool stages, anyway. And the French director put a slow-mo on
it's
it,
really
poor bloke.
Unfair. Yeah.
And he's just wobbling
don't do
away.
That to a
but hero. And as we said earlier, Fiji had like a 98% scrum success for the whole year, and he was the cornerstone.
But when we were at the end of the World Cup, we had to pick our 15s of the tournament, and everyone approaches those things with a slightly different perspective. But if you just pick the 15 best players, you'll all end up with pretty much the same team. So at the end of the World Cup, a lot of it was who brought us the most joy, who did we enjoy watching the most. That became a factor in a lot of our selections, which is why we ended up with some Portuguese players in our teams, and Tanguy would have made a few teams because, A, he was really effective, but he was part of a unit that set a platform for Fiji that no one really expected them to bring. So if you pick, I think this exercise is probably the best 15 of the year.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's slightly different. He definitely deserves a name check, but I don't think you're going to pick him in the best 15 ahead of Mal Herber.
Okay, so we'll go Inche and Mal Herb as the props. Hooker.
Okay, so this is where I don't think the stats work on all of the positions, because some of it you go, well, yeah, maybe not, but there's some, like, I'm thinking of Stuart Barnes sometimes going, but it's about feel and who made you get out your seat.
The eye test.
Yeah. However, on both counts, I think hooker is the one.
This guy is probably number one for both, isn't he?
So the nominations, I suppose, we put on our sheet were Dan Sheehan, Cody Taylor, Bongi Mbonambi, and Pieter Malvaca. And Opta have given us the stats, and Malvaca is, his stats are insane. So he's actually just behind Dan Sheehan on number of carries per game, but then he's top for gain-like success. Almost 73% of his carries went through the gain line, which is crazy. He almost scored a try every game, which is crazy as well. He made an average of 52 metres per match over the year, which is crazy for a hooker. And his carry dominance was second only to Tevita Ikaniyevere, the Fijian hooker. So Malvaca, and he was 93% line-out thrower as well.
And he put a wicked kick in against the All Blacks in the opening game, I remember. And when he came on for Marchand pretty early in that game, and like Bongi and Mbonambi, actually had to shoulder a lot of work that would otherwise have been shared. I think you have to go a long way to pick a better hooker than him. We talk about work rate. Jamie George played virtually every minute of the World Cup for England. Bongi, when they lost Malcolm Marks, he had to do the same. And that was an enormous shift that he put in a side that was battling its way through 3 1-point knockout victories. I would like to say I would love to have seen more of Dan Sheehan at the World Cup, because in any other year where the Grand Slam was the biggest achievement, Dan Sheehan was an outstanding player in Ireland's campaign. And he is one of those hookers who can seemingly do everything. And the way that Leinster and Ireland use him down the short side and the way he interacts, I just think he's outstanding. It was just a shame we didn't see more of him at the World Cup. And because of that, I mean, we didn't see much more of Malvaca, to be honest. But
yeah, true.
But we did see more of him at the World Cup than Sheehan. So he would get my vote too, I think.
Can I have a very, very quick honourable mention? Because I know there are some South Africans that listen to this because they complain about how much we moan. But Dion Faerie, just for the fact that he basically is a flanker, hadn't played hooker for years, and is what, 36?
Yeah.
And played the whole World Cup final at hooker, having never played there for such a long time, is crazy. Yeah. And he was amazing.
Okay, so we've got Oxenche, Pitu Mulvaca, and Frans Malherb as our front row. Okay, into the second row. Are you in agreement that Eben Etzebeth is again nailed on like he was last year?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
So I think we can...
No argument.
...easily lock him in. The second... I actually think second row, for me anyway, is one of the easiest positions.
Do you think so? Because this was one that... on our long list, I've got Mostert, RG Snaiman, which is a kind of bench starter thing, Itoje, Whitelock, possibly Retallack too, Wocky, McFarland as the slightly more hipster pick. I was
in my World Cup
for 15. A five.
McFarland was in my World Cup 15.
Yeah.
Scott Barrett.
Me too, yeah.
Scott Barrett is the one for me that I would lock in next to.
Oh, he wasn't even on my list. There you go.
Yeah. I think in an exercise like this, you have to decide if he's a six or a second row, because he played a lot of six.
True.
But yeah, you might... That's a, that's a shout, because I'd sort of had him factored in as a six in my thinking. But
he got a red card once, didn't he?
He got a red card in the warm-up game against South Africa at Twickenham, do you remember?
And they lost by miles, didn't they?
They got absolutely hammered, yeah. But he started, I think he was second row for the World Cup final.
Yeah. He split up Whitelock and Retallick, which is no mean feat. Like one of the great second row pairings of all time, isn't he? So, yeah, I didn't have a five listed down, so I'm happy to go with the consensus on this one.
Wocky, he's similar, isn't he? He's
I suppose, do Wocky and some of the French guys lose a bit because they didn't win a Grand Slam and they got knocked out of the quarterfinal of the World Cup? So
yeah, I think I'd have
they had to be outstanding to
Tyke
get the team.
Byrne would be higher than Wocky in my list, on you're right, on that basis. And Tyke Byrne, what a player he is, by the way. And we're going to get Andy Farrell as the Lions coach appointed imminently, and his team as it stands right now would be packed full of Ireland players. And Tyke Byrne would be one of them. He was outstanding for Ireland at the World Cup and in the Grand Slam. So for me, it's between Barrett and Tyke Byrne, I think.
Okay.
Will, do you want to make the final?
Can I just throw out a couple of stats? So
go on.
Obviously, Etzebeth, most dominant tackles, almost two per match, which is miles ahead of everyone in the year. He's also got the best game-like success of the top guys who played regularly. And Theo McFarland, carry dominance, almost 60% of his carries were dominant, which is a decent effort. Yeah, I don't know, casting votes. So who are we saying between Scott Barrett or...
Scott Barrett and Tyke Byrne.
Unless you've got a really strong argument for...
No, see, I didn't have a strong argument. If I was going to push, I was going to push for another Bocker, but let's go with Scott Barrett. Well, I thought... Yes, Naaman, just because when he came on, he was amazing. But I don't think I'm going to upset the entire thread of the argument. Yeah, let's go for Scott Barrett, because I think made it to World Cup final.
And was
Ireland
very good as well for the All Blacks. So let's go Etzebeth and Scott Barrett then in the second row, the back row.
That's a physical duo, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
But this is what we were saying, like the pack is a very 2023 pack, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, totally. And in the back row, where do you want to start? I kind of feel like there's two... fairly easily locked in here, which would be Peter Steph de Toy and Ardie Surveyor.
Oh, well, I think I can have all three easily locked in here, which is brutal, really, because you go just listing the names that you could possibly pick, and you could go, we have any of these. So Surveyor, Doris, Bottier, Aldry, Peter Steph de Toy, Khaleesi, Earl, Vermeulen, Courtney Laws, Jack Morgan, and I've probably missed out loads there. That's a lot of good players, isn't it? I haven't even mentioned... Josh van der Fleer and Omani and all those guys. But this is, I think, going to be one of my non-negotiables. And I'm afraid you're going to have to put Lavani Bottier in the team.
Okay, interesting.
You're in my flat now, Alfie, yeah. And you're going to have to put Bottier in. I just love him. Like, so we spoke to him in Marseille and sort of typically understated Fijian guy, very Christian, was a prison warden, has got an amazing story, was telling us how he used to have to go up to the top of the hill to get some signal to watch Fiji games when he was a kid. He's, how old is he? Let's look this up. I think he was 35, which is absolutely absurd for someone in that position to be that good.
Brilliant, that brilliant club season as well.
34.
I was going to say, if you're a player whose presence dominates all the conversations in the build-up to a game, you know... You're talking about not just a special player, but a match-winning threat. And if you recall, we were down in Aix-en-Provence the week of the England-Fiji quarter-final. The conversation with England coaches and players was, how do you stop him? Remember, we were in this concert hall with Tom Curry, and we were talking to Tom Curry about how they stop him. This is a Fiji team with world-class players strewn through their back line, and the conversation was about Lavani Bottier, and that to me shows how good he was. Listen, there are loads of others there that do deserve a name check. If you're talking about the waiting of the World Cup, Ben Earl, England's player of the tournament,
definitely worth a mention.
Khaleesi, leadership, captaincy, inspiration, playing the best rugby he's played only months after a major injury, which is staggering, would have probably the strongest case he's ever had to be in a World 15, I'd say. But
his carry dominance and game-like success was amazing. I sort of, maybe he gets lost in the box thing sometimes, Khaleesi, because, and also by the fact that everyone knows about all the stuff he does off the field and how inspirational he is as a leader. Like, I know there's lots of people who go, I don't know why he's in the team. And you just think, well, he's a seriously good rugby player as well as all the other stuff.
Yeah.
And like, he's top in the world for game-line success at flanker. 80%.
If you recall, 4 years ago, there was a conversation around if Khaleesi wasn't the captain, if he wasn't the character he was, for pure rugby requirements, should the Boks have played Francois Lowe in the back row ahead of Khaleesi? You know, obviously, he carries so much more with him. 4 years on, that's why I made the point, his rugby is as important as everything else, which is why, from a pure rugby perspective, he's definitely in the conversation. But
however, I mean,
Steve Jones will hate this because we've pretty much agreed on almost everything.
Yeah,
we're gonna have to have a row at some point. But yeah, Bottier, fair. I'm on board with that. Peter Steph Dutoit, I don't think they'll have any row.
And Ardie Surveyor.
And Ardie Surveyor nailed on number eight, surely.
Well, I think that's our forward pack done then.
Yeah.
Let's see if maybe we'll have more arguments when it comes to the back line. But just to recap then, so we've got Oxenche, Pitu Muvaka, Franz Malherber, our front row, Eben Etzebeth and Scott Barrett in the second row, Peter Steph Dutoit, Lavani Bottier, and Ardie Surveyor.
That's front foot ball, isn't it?
We haven't talked about the depth at 6 and 8.
I just like that it's balanced as well.
Absolutely. But the bench would be pretty hotly debated as well. I would like...
Courtney Laws
deserves a name check. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
We're never losing a scrum. We've got top darts. We've got a guy who's, 6 foot 6 at six, as well as Etzebeth, to smash people in Peter Steph Dutoit. We've got the best turnover merchant in the world and the most dynamic number eight in the world. Like, there we go. That'll do.
That will do us. Okay, lovely stuff. All right, I tell you what, we'll have a quick break, but up next, we'll get into the back line. So into the back line then, starting with the halfbacks, scrum half.
Do you want a row? Yeah.
Go on then.
We wanted a row, didn't we? So I put out a tweet to tee this up, to be like, come on then, everyone. Who would you be really annoyed if it wasn't in the World 15? And the first two answers were Antoine Dupont and definitely not Antoine Dupont, which kind of sums up our exercise today, doesn't it? Of everyone's got their opinions and they're all valid. And I am going to completely contradict myself here because I'm going to read you some statistics. The most try assist per game, Antoine Dupont, 1.35 a game. Absurd, by the way. He gets more than a try assist every game. Line break assists, top, Antoine Dupont, more than one a game. Defenders beaten per game, Antoine Dupont, 3.15. The next best is 1.9. So he makes almost double the amount of defenders beaten a game. Vasil Lobzinadze from Georgia. Meters made per game, top, Antoine Dupont, 42. I'm going to pick Aaron Smith.
Okay. But so this is the interesting thing, though. Maybe we won't have an argument because I had Aaron Smith down as well.
Arguing.
Why?
Well, I think Dupont falls down maybe slightly with the not getting past the quarterfinal and not winning the Grand Slam in this conversation.
And he had... why did he get himself hit in the face? It's all his own fault. It was ridiculous. Yeah. He was so good that he annoyed the Namibians.
Yeah.
And then they were like, well, we're going to have to break his cheekbone.
I wonder with Dupont, is it almost getting to the stage similar to what we said with Tadhg Furlong? Almost, you get accustomed to the level little bit. Like, we're so used to him being ridiculous, and those stats there you've just read out are ridiculous, that you kind of take it for granted and start to look elsewhere for this award.
Like, I mean, he clearly is one of the greats, isn't he? And we're not saying, oh, Antoine Dupont's not very good. Obviously not. He's insane. But it's an interesting thing, like doing my nausea thing of listening back to last year's pod. I said a similar thing about Dupont as I'm going to say now, is I didn't think he had as good a year as he did last year. Because last year, he didn't go on the Japan tour. He only played 7 tests, but they won a Grand Slam. So 5 of them were him captaining them to a Grand Slam. Pretty decent. He was insane in some of the Six Nations games, like that tackle on Mac Hansen where he held him up over the line in Dublin. But they lost the game and they didn't win a Grand Slam. And then when they got to the World Cup, they got knocked out in the quarterfinal. Obviously, it wasn't because he was bad or anything.
That tackle was one of the moments of the year.
Yeah. But I'm just thinking...
You hear people say, don't you, which doesn't really make any sense, but I think you can kind of understand what they're getting at, of that Aaron Smith's the best scrum half in the world, Antoine Dupont's the best player in the world.
Yeah, because he does more than just be a scrum half.
Yeah, like the tackling, his carrying.
He's like a matador, isn't he? He drags people towards him.
We have to mention Jamison Gibson-Park, don't we?
Yeah. Yes, we do.
But he's taken Ireland to another level, and he probably falls down because of the World Cup, but on the Grand Slam, like, he was critical to Ireland and the way that they've played to win the Grand Slam, and the way that just added something.
And actually, it is really funny, isn't it? Because I think back to that quarterfinal, which Ireland could easily have ended up winning, if they win that game, I think we're probably all in agreement. They beat Argentina, they get themselves to a final. Gibson Park, I think, would be in our team of the year.
Yeah, probably,
it's,
yeah.
It's such small yeah. margins between
them's
these
the
guys.
Breaks of World Cups. Yeah,
yeah.
So Smith, I know it was disallowed, but he was unbelievably good in the disallowed try in the World Cup final with Mwanga. He retired. Well, he hasn't retired, but he's not going to play for the All Blacks anymore. And maybe, I don't know, because I hate it when it's like, oh, we're giving this award just because he's been brilliant for ages. But I do think he had one of his best years in his mid-30s. It sounds weird to be like, oh, and to keep up with DuPont. It's like, well, DuPont's still better then, isn't he? But I actually think in some parts of the season, he was better than DuPont.
So are we going with Aaron Smith then? Are we happy there, Alex, if we opt for him
Pray
at nine?
For the comments.
Well, it's not a wrong decision. He's not the best. Like, Antoine Dupont is the best in the world, but
obviously they all bow down to San Marquez from Portugal, though, don't they?
Yeah, I was just going through my World 15 Marquez for the World Cup. I had to file it before the
Portugal Fiji.
Before Portugal Fiji, and I had the Samoan scrum half in, and then Marquez.
Oh, with amazing hair.
Yeah, because I loved watching him. He was back to what I said earlier about he just brought so much joy. He wasn't the best scrum half at the World Cup, but he was the most eye-catching. I loved watching him. He brought something different to that tournament, but he doesn't get in this team.
Jonathan Taumatini.
Yeah. No, I'm happy to go with Aaron Smith. I think we're being led by what happened in France, because otherwise DuPont is the best. Gibson Park has probably had the biggest impact on the team this year.
Mm. That's fair.
In winning the Grand Slam.
Everyone's just spat out their Prosecco, haven't they? God.
If it was purely
DuPont's
down
not
to
the world team
if
of the year.
If it was purely down to you, Alex, who would you go for? Like, if me and Will weren't here.
Why are you in my flat on your own, mate?
I think I'd make it's not a straightforward selection because of, as I just outlined, there are so many different criteria for each one. I think DuPont is the best, but he missed so much of the World Cup. And in the games he played, he was awesome. But he doesn't have the World Cup waiting that Aaron Smith has. But we can't overlook what Gibson Park did for Ireland in the Grand Slam. So if I try and weight it like that, I think it probably is Aaron Smith first. I think it's Gibson Park second and DuPont third, despite the fact that, all things being equal, you'd pick DuPont in your team ahead of the other two every time.
And in fact, DuPont would probably be first name on the team sheet out of every single position as well, potentially.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, well, let's go with Aaron Smith then, and people can be furious.
Alfie, I can't believe you've done that. That's unbelievable.
I know, right? Who's the halfback partner?
So this one's hard. I feel like fly half has been hard for a while. Last year we picked Sexton on the strength of the tour to New Zealand. They won 2-1 down there, but they didn't win the slam. And I think our discussion was between him and Untermak. And this year, we mentioned right at the top of the pod, Andre Pollard was injured for quite a lot of the year, sort of didn't really fit into Leicester that well, that easily.
Can't pick him off.
But he came and won in the World Cup and kicked every single goal. He got 100% of his goals at the World Cup, which is unbelievable.
But, okay, but he only played a game and a half.
The sample size, I think, is too small, isn't it?
So then you go for Johnny Sexton, who, if Steve was here, I think he would say they should have taken him off before the end of the New Zealand game and brought on someone with some pace. Mwanga, who had a really good year. Owen Farrell, also. Like, Sarri's win the title again. And we haven't talked too much about club tariffs in this, have we? But he had a really good club season and then drags England to the one they all want, the bronze medal.
I feel like it's Richie Mwanga.
Yeah, it's Richie Mwanga.
Okay. So I had Pollard.
Did you?
To be honest.
Really?
For the World Cup tariff thing.
For coming on after half an hour of the semi-final and playing the final.
Cojones, isn't it, for kicking the goals in the semi and the final. 1 point wins and they're based off his kicking. Which is why we all have different opinions, guys. It's all okay.
Well, I think we're saying...
I'm happy to go with
no question. You could argue he won. He was the difference that got them there, because the coaching staff had the cojones. They had the foresight, the bravery to put aside a selection error, as it could be seen. Pull off Marnie Libok and bring on Pollard off for half an hour. And that change in style and the authority and the control that he brought saw them home by a point against England and a point against New Zealand. I understand what you're saying. I just don't think he's, over the year, had the body of work that, that the others would have had.
Can I do you a quick New Year's Day quiz? Very quick.
Go on.
And the listeners can get involved too. Let us know. The, who are the two top players, fly halves, who had the highest average kicking metres per game in 2023? I think you won't get either of them.
Highest average kicking
metres
per game?
So the top one kicked almost 500 metres per game, so on average, 471, and the one below him was 430.
So I would have said probably Owen Farrell, because I'm thinking England kick
so
a lot.
So Farrell's fourth, so I suppose it depends where you...
Jalabert?
No, Alex, do you want to guess?
Are you going to tell us Mwanga?
No, Finn Russell and George Ford. Ford was
okay,
top.
Wow.
Finn Russell second. Isn't that interesting?
Top. And how many?
Yeah. So when he played, they kicked the leather off it.
Oh my God! He only started like three games.
Is that absolutely
two games?
I wonder how big a weighting that Argentina game was.
Well,
for
losing
that early.
I mean, that's all of
and Japan. Yeah.
You started Argentina and Japan.
There were 70 kicks in the Japan game or something, weren't there?
Yeah. Wow. So he didn't play the Six Nations.
And there isn't the South African in the top 10. Libok played a lot, didn't he, at 10 this season, this year?
It would have been lovely if Libok had been in this conversation.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
Because of the way that he plays the game.
Yeah.
But
I think we're happy with Mwanga, aren't we? So we've got the All Blacks halfback pairing. Let's get into the centres, 12 and 13.
Tuasova and Naikalevu, that's a hell of a partnership, isn't it? Damian Diallende maybe dipped for a couple of years, but at the two World Cup years that he's had, he's been awesome. Riku Ioane's always there or thereabouts, but I think Jordy Barrett and Bundi Aki are my pair.
Both 12s.
Even though they're both 12s. Yeah, I think I'm putting Bundi at 13.
You've cheated.
Crowbarred.
You've twisted.
Bundy's got to be in there, I think.
Well, in that case, I think we have to go for him rather than Jordy Barrett.
Okay, well.
What do you reckon, Alec? But, so
Jordy Barrett was my player of the World Cup.
Yeah, see, this is... So, okay, this is the... but... you're right, but Jordy Barrett was so good for New Zealand.
New Zealand's game, New Zealand turned the corner when Jordy Barrett came back. He didn't play at Twickenham in the South Africa game. He didn't play in the pool defeat to France. He came back and changed everything for
He
them.
Should have been on the World Player of the Year shortlist, I think.
Definitely should have been.
Yeah, well, I'm happy with Jordy Barrett.
Like, he is the complete player. Defensively, how many times did he make goal line tackles, holding the ball up?
Like, he's one against Ireland, one in that game.
Epic. Like, incredible defence. Offensively, the conversation isn't who's a better player, it's who's had a better year. But he offers way more than Bundi Aki, who had a brilliant year, or a brilliant World Cup. Jordy Barrett's cross-kicking, his running, his vision, he can play every position, but he's found a home at 12. So I think he has to be the
12. Can I throw some stats out? So who's the top in each of these categories? For carries per game, Bundi Aki. For meters made per game, Bundi Aki. For tries scored per game, Bundi Aki. For line breaks, Bundi Aki. For line break assists, Bundi Aki. Defenders beaten, Ollie Lawrence. Second, Bundi Aki. But I wanted Barrett too. So if we're saying we can't have Bundy as a 13, then I'm happy for Jordy Barrett to be the 12.
Yeah, let's go with Jordy Barrett then. 13, I think, is harder, but. What do you reckon?
Well, I've already picked mine, so I'm going to leave you to
pick
Alex.
A 13 to play at 13.
Outside Barrett, yeah. So those would be, on my list anyway, Fiku, Ioane, Naikalevu, the guys I've noted down.
He's mine, Naikalevu.
Naikalevu, yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah, okay.
I mean, I would, that combo of, you put Tuasova, Naikalevu into the All Blacks team, the South Africa team, the France team, they are... As a combo, they are about as good as you'll find as a midfield pairing anywhere in the world. And there is an argument if you pick a combination, you pick those two. But I just think the way that Barrett played, he has to be the 12. And I don't think there was a 13. Maybe apart from Riku Ioane.
Ringrose, we haven't mentioned.
Haven't mentioned Ringrose. Yeah, good Six Nations. But I don't think there's a 13 who at the World Cup had as big an impact on the tournament as Naikalevu.
Naikalevu, top for meters made, top for try scored, second for defenders beaten behind Ioane, second for line breaks behind Ringrose. Decent shout. Happy with Naikalevu, and he was their captain, wasn't he, as well?
Yeah.
So a bit of leadership in there. Not that we're going to lack that with quite a lot of the rest of the team. That'd be quite fun. Naikalevu, yeah.
Yeah.
Fijian in the team. That feels apt, doesn't it? Because I remember my hope for 2023...
Two Fijians in the team.
Two Fijians in the team. Was that Fiji got to the... quarters, and they did. So I got my New Year's resolution, and now we've got two Fijians inside.
Okay, beautiful. Let's go with that. Also, just to mention as well to Jesse Creel, like he wasn't blockbuster, outstanding highlights, but you think of how important Lacanio Am is to the Springboks and him being out, and Jesse Creel was kind of there. Reliable,
really,
solid.
Yeah, really solid World
Cup. Yeah, and is worth really a mention. Good. But Jordi Barrett and Nice Alevu then in the centres, the back three. So at the top of the podcast, I said, oh, only two players get in. And actually, I missed off Damien Penno, who was on our list last year. Would you both put him into the
So last year, three? Alex didn't have Penno in his... You said he was like in your top three for both wings positions, if that makes sense.
And 11,
and you didn't want to pick him, but we made you, I think.
Okay. Well, that won't happen this year. I'll pick who I want.
So Damien Penno, one wing.
Yeah, and then other mentions for Will Jordan, Colby, Mac Hansen, James Lowe, Kurtley Aaronza, Talaya, Matteo Carreras was really good at the World Cup. There's going to be loads of others, aren't there? But they're probably in...
Those are the ones
general combo.
In the conversation.
Mark Talaya, for me.
Over Will Jordan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, I think so. I just think Will Jordan, I mean, scored record-equaling number of tries. I just felt Talaya was harder for opposing teams to grab hold of. I felt he made a bigger difference to New Zealand as an attacking threat. I mean, Jordan, I think, is and will be a better player. And obviously scored all those tries. I just thought Talaya was the kind of threat that South Africa really struggled to tie down.
Quickly on Penno, because like, he's obviously in the team, but amazing. He scored 14 tries in 11 tests this year. That is unbelievable, isn't
he's
it?
He's unreal. And he's joined Bordeaux and can't stop scoring for them.
Yeah, he's such a good player.
He scored four tries in the first half of his debut and has just carried on.
Yeah.
Nuts.
So on the Jordan one, I'm hearing the Twitterati in our comment section going, hang on, Jordan scored a record equaling 8 tries of the World Cup, 10 tries and 10 tests, was on the end of everything, and you're not picking him.
And you're going to get the deciding vote here, Will.
Oh, am I?
I would pick Will Jordan.
Oh, that's hard, isn't it?
And also there will be Springbok fans saying, Chez and Colby.
Colby charged down the kick that was vital.
Try in that quarterfinal against France as well.
And Aaronza scores almost every week himself too. Although some of that run was at the very back end of 22, wasn't it? Blimey. So, okay. Cards on the table. I had Jordan and Penno as mine. But I'm actually going to be swayed by Alex here. And I'm going to go for Talaya. Because I'm remembering back to the World Cup when we had to pick our awards for the tournament. And I picked him as... one of my favourite players of the tournament.
Let's quickly round off our fullback then, and then we can then we will have named our 15 of the year.
Weirdly, lack of massive candidates. I mean, there's obviously some very good fullbacks, but possibly a bit like 10, where you sort of go, yeah. Because last year we had on our list Ange Capuozzo, because he was amazing, wasn't he? But Italy didn't have the year at all that they did. And Steward, we had on our list this time, and he got dropped a bit for Smith, didn't he, because of the game plan change. Leroux was our fullback last year. I think he probably should be this year as well. Hugo Keenan, Thomas Ramos. Ramos, again, doesn't maybe go all the way through to this because of the fact that they didn't win the World Cup or get that further through. Yeah, Beauden Barrett. One person on my Twitter said, you've got to have Beauden Barrett.
He was my World Cup 15 fullback. I've just had a look.
Yeah.
I think I love Hugo Keenan, and he was brilliant for Grand Slam. Thomas Ramos, goal-kicking fullback.
Missed quite an important one, though, didn't he?
But he did.
Colby.
Charged down.
He did, yeah.
So fullback's a tough one, then.
Fullback is a tough one.
I'm going Leroux. Double World Cup winner.
Didn't start for South Africa, though.
I don't think he started enough.
He didn't, really.
Damien Willemser started.
Oh, God.
Willemser started.
I was so definitive, and then I panicked.
But I don't think we're going to pick any South African backs, but...
And that's your fault, by the way, just for all the listeners, because I had two, so...
But I think that's a result of the fact that, you know, I think Vinny Leroux is a better fullback than Willemser, but Willemser was the one who started.
I really like Willemser. He's a hell of a player. He's a really cool player.
Best fullback of the year?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying...
Oh, yeah, of course he is. Yeah, of course
he's brilliant.
You go Beauden?
I think I picked Beauden because no one else screamed a case at me.
Okay.
So Will had Vili Leroux. You had Beauden Barrett. I was thinking Thomas Ramos. So I'm happy to cede it to Bowden.
Marcus Smith, right? That'll really
imagine
get
that.
The comments going.
Imagine that, yeah. There's a clickbait selection for you.
Yeah.
You'll never guess who they picked at fullback, kind of headline on it.
Yeah. Bowden, should we go Bowden Barrett? Which means New Zealand have utterly dominated the back line.
Yeah, hang on. So they've got Aaron Smith, Muanga, Jordy Barrett, Talia, and Bowden Barrett. Is that too much? Is that too many?
Probably, but...
But quite a bocker-heavy pack. That sort of feels about right, doesn't it?
Well, that probably is right, isn't it?
It's probably about right. So let's lock that in then. So our back line, Aaron Smith, Richie Mwanga, Jordy Barrett, Nia Salevu, and then the back three of Damian Penno, Mark Talia, and Bowden Barrett. And our forwards, Oxenche, Pitu Muvaka, Franz Malherbe, Eben Etzebeth, Scott Barrett, Peter Steftatoy, Lavani Bottia, and Ardie Surveyor.
Never going to lose a game there. So for the we don't really have an official award for this, but coach of the year last time, Alan Dimmock, before we started, was like, it's got to be Pablo Lemoine, the Chilean coach who took them to the World Cup. So in a similar theme, I might allow Patrice Lagisquet, the Portuguese coach, to have a go coaching this side, unless anyone wants to. Simon Rau-Lewis, a good shout.
It's got to be Razzie, isn't it?
Razzie, yeah.
They generate a lot of enemies, South Africa, by pushing the boundaries and testing the authorities about what's allowed and what isn't allowed. And Razzie doesn't help himself with some of the things that he has said in the past about referees, etc. But the decisions that they took, there was a shot of Nina Barr and Razzie and the whole backroom staff having like a council of war almost about 25 minutes into
that semi-final.
Semi-final against England, which they won because they made big, important tactical decisions at the time. Took off Marnie Libok, who then, after what, half an hour, who then didn't play the final, but that was the right decision. And so tactically and leadership-wise, they got it spot on at the key moment when they were about to go out of the World Cup. So for all that, he comes with a lot of baggage, but just for that moment, I think you have to...
Raznaba, the duo.
Yeah, you just have to acknowledge that moment. I mean, I think, given it's an honorary position, it should definitely go to Rau-Lewis or Lagisquet, but you should have mentioned those.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, that is our team of the year. We got there in the end. Pretty formidable side, I think we'll all agree. No doubt you'll have all your own selections, and no doubt you also disagree with us on many of them as well. But that is our 15 of the year. We'll come on to our awards shortly. Up next, though, we're going to hear from the Northampton Saints back rower, England under 20 as well, Henry Pollock. I caught up with him a couple of weeks ago.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Okay, Henry, good to meet you. Good to speak to you. Thanks for joining us for our first ruck of 2024. We'll maybe look ahead in just a moment. We'll do a bit of a look back on 2023 as well. But you join us in England under 20 camp. How's the camp been? A bit of time away in Portugal must be nice when it's miserable, cold and dark in the UK.
Yeah, no, it's been really good, actually. Lots of lads are coming from different places. around the country. So it's good to finally come in and, you know, get everyone back on the same page. And no, it's been really good. And we've built up today. We've played the Portuguese under 20 team, which is really good. Just doing a bit of training against them. So yeah, we're loving it. And yeah, it's really exciting.
So this is going to be an incredibly elementary question, but what does an England under 20 camp look like? Like, what do you get up to? So you've said you've had the game there. Outside of that, how's the camp kind of structured, and what do you look to get out of it?
So we obviously had a bit of, so today, for example, we had that big session this morning. We had a Bronco just before that to see where our fitness levels were. And then we did the session against Portugal for about an hour and a half, had a bit of lunch. And then after that, we had a gym session. And then tonight we're going into town somewhere to have dinner as a squad, which would be good for team bonding. And then, yeah, just a couple of team meetings in between. So, yeah, they fill the days up really well, so you never really get bored. It's pretty good.
Awesome. It must be nice to almost get away a bit, get into a different environment, certainly for you as someone, as a young player. Kind of how beneficial is that in terms of your development, learning to be in that kind of camp setting, if you like?
Oh, no, yeah, it's amazing. Getting the opportunity to come out to Portugal is... Nah, it's been really good. And, you know, you just come in and you just try and learn as much as possible from all the new lads, because it's really interesting because everyone has like a different perspective on like how they do it at their club. So understanding that from each of them is really good. And you can kind of pick together a few pieces from each player and, you know, just kind of come in here and just become a better rugby player, which is one of the main aims of the camp.
How was the Bronco? I've heard so much about it. I'm fortunate that I've never done it, but how was it?
Yeah, it was pretty brutal, actually. The weather this week has been not the best. It's been raining the last couple of days, but as soon as we got the Bronco set up, it started to be nice and warm, and the sun was out. So, yeah, no, it was hard, but it's a good fitness test, and the coaches want to see you push yourself.
And what about you then? We'll come on to kind of how your 2023 has been and making your Premiership debut and all that sort of stuff. But for a lot of our audience, I suppose they might not know your story, your route into rugby. What did your pathway look like? Did you take up the sport at a young age and have always stuck at it? Kind of when did you first start playing? Who first got you into the game?
So yeah, I kind of started when I was about back at prep school. Just kind of got into a bit of tag rugby and then joined a club called Banbury Rugby Club. Was there for a couple of years. And then moved to Buckingham, and that's kind of where I went from stride to stride. Yeah, Buckingham was amazing. Loved it out there. Started at 9 when I came in, and then moved to the back row after a few interesting conversations with referees at times. But yeah, and then bam, and then Buckingham, and then obviously I was at Stowe, so that really helped. And then, yeah, always been in the Saints Academy and just kind of went through that pathway the whole way up.
It seems like, you know, a 9 getting in trouble with officials isn't too out of the ordinary. It's a bit of a characteristic of 9s, isn't it? But when did that move then from 9 into the back row happen, like age-wise?
Probably around 12, 13, when it was getting a bit more physical and I was kind of getting on the nerve of the referees, and a few coaches were like, would you want to try the back row? And I was like, yeah, I'll give it a shot. And then ever since, loved it there. Kind of found my feet really easily there, so... No, yeah, one of the coaches just said, you know what, let's just try and move you and see what happens. And luckily it did work, so.
Well, it's worked out pretty well so far. Sporty family as well. We were speaking before and you were saying that kind of sport is a big part of your family, both your mum and dad?
Yeah, mum and dad, massive thing. All three of us children do sport. So mum and dad has been a big driver. Mum was a modern pentathlete and now she's a triathlon coach. And then dad ran for Scotland at age grade level. So yeah, being brought up in a house, a sporty household, which definitely helps. And then going to a sporty school, at prep school, where you kind of get stuck into every single sport is massive. That's kind of what you want, is just getting exposed to all the sports so you have a really good baseline. And then when you get a little bit older, you can narrow that down to one or two sports.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because it's something you often hear that discussion, don't you? I think we maybe hear it a little bit more with football, because kids tend to go into academies younger. But how beneficial was it for you to play loads of different sports, and then I suppose you can start to specialize in rugby once you get a bit older and start taking it a bit more seriously? It's quite an interesting debate to have.
No, yeah, definitely. For me, definitely doing other sports with massive, like hockey, cricket, football, just for your hand-eye coordination at a young age, because the best thing for young kids nowadays is just to get their hands on every single sport they can do, and just get their hand-eye coordination to the best of their ability. And then when it comes to that age where you have to choose one or two, you already know where you're going, because you want to go down that road because you've been doing it for such a long time. And it's such an easy transition because you know what you're doing. You know, you've been doing it for ages on the Zed. So, no, yeah, it's massive.
Different life experiences as well, I suppose, and different teammates, different kind of social settings. I think there's loads of benefits for it as well. Let's look back on 2023 then. So you played in the Premiership Cup in 22, played again in it this year and had a really good impact. And then Premiership debut off the bench in the East Midlands Derby fairly recently towards the end of the year as well. It's from my perspective looking in, it feels like it's been a heck of a year for you. But how would you sum it up?
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind. Just if I sat down this time last year and said that you're going to make a Premiership debut at 18 and then get selected for under-20s camp, I'd probably bite your hand off. No, Saints are really good. They give you opportunities no matter what your age is. If they think you're ready, they'll give you that opportunity. So, it's been a hell of a year and I'm loving it. So, yeah, I'll just see what's next to come.
And as you say, you've been in the Saints Academy since you were 13. That must have been a pretty special moment to make your Premiership debut and in that derby as well.
Yeah, no, it was massive. It was actually a weird build-up in the week. I was kind of in and around the squad. And then I think a player dropped out due to injury. And then Dallas gave me the message being like, you're on the bench. So, yeah, when that kind of happened, it was kind of surreal. And then you don't really you don't really think about it until you run out and you run out to a packed Welford Road and it's pretty surreal and you kind of just take a minute to just, yeah, it's unreal. It's a moment I'll never forget, that's for sure.
What were the nerves like? I can imagine it could be quite strange almost sitting there on the bench thinking you might be coming on for your Prem debut, but trying to stay focused on what you have to stay focused on as a replacement. How was all of that?
Yeah, no, so I was remember it was just our second half and I'm probably thinking I'm getting 5-10 minutes here because the game's really tight and it's a bit of a whirlwind. And then I remember went for a warm-up and I got the call saying, you're coming on. And my heart just kind of dropped and I kind of jogged over the sideline and then got the call I was on. It was a very amazing feeling, to be honest. But no, the boys really helped me out when I came on. Got a few good messages from the boys playing and just basically told me to do my thing, don't get in the show. And yeah, no, that just kind of gave me that extra bit of confidence.
And it seems like there's quite a few big name players there in terms of you as a back row. If you look at Saints, I know with Courtney Laws and then Lewis as well, that, you know, how much do you kind of chat to, rely on those senior guys for little nuggets of information and bits of advice for someone like yourself at the start of your career?
No, definitely. Like whenever I have a question, I'll definitely go and ask them and they're definitely helpful. They always come over and give me some tips here and there if they see something that's not quite right. And now that's the kind of beauty, you know, at Saints, from day one, you're all submerged in the first team. So you kind of get that relationship from very early on. So, no, it's amazing. And you kind of, you're like a sponge trying to soak up all the information. It's very good.
So looking ahead to 2024 then, are you someone that sets goals? Like, do you have specific goals you want to tick off over the next 12 months? How do you approach that sort of thing?
I probably have as a family, we normally sit down in New Year's and go over our New Year's resolutions. For me, it'll probably be play some 20s, get some minutes under my belt in 20s, and then next year put my hand up for first team. But at the same time, just enjoy my rugby. Like, if Saints don't think I'm ready for Prem next year, then that's fine, and I'll go back out to loan and I'll get my minutes under my belt. And then same with 20s. If I'm not quite ready for that, then I'll go away, work on what I need to work on. But no, yeah, definitely one or two things.
Well, it's going to be, if 2023 is anything to go by, hopefully a really exciting 2024 for you as well. I'll just finish up as well. You mentioned earlier that your dad ran for Scotland, both your parents Scottish, you said to us when we were chatting before. So you're in England under 20. Parents fully on board with you representing the old enemy?
No, definitely. I was brought up in a household where mum and dad were both born and bred from Scotland. So there's definitely that side of the family. But no, they're just happy that I'm playing rugby and just enjoying it. It doesn't really matter what colour shirt I'm wearing. So, you know, they're so happy with like me enjoying my rugby, and no matter what colour shirt that is, and they'll all support me. So, yeah, they're really good.
Well, mate, wish you all the best for 2024. I hope it's a cracker for you.
Thank you very much, mate. Cheers.
Okay, so rounding off our first pod of 2024 for the Ruck, we've named our 15 of the year. Great to chat to Henry Pollock as well, a young man who I think has a very bright future in the game. A few final awards, Will Kelleher and Alex Lowe. Should we do unexpected hero first of all?
Yeah, so mine is a sort of countrywide award to Portugal. I think if we sat on these sofas last year and said Portugal were going to do what they did at the World Cup, everyone would go, really? They were just so joyful, amazing. I watched them live once against Wales, which you thought would be like 60-something, five, and was pretty close. They then beat Fiji, which ruined one of my evenings when I was trying to write about it off the telly, and it was almost, oh my God, maybe Australia will get through and Eddie Jones would be saved after all. But that was insane. They've got a game against South Africa this year in 24, which is awesome, isn't it, to see that they're actually being rewarded. They're playing two against England A. Let's hope that's actually a genuine fixture rather than just a bit of 2 second teams. So yeah, the Portuguese, like, awesome. Alex. And unexpected heroes, I would say.
I'm going to agree with something Will said earlier about Dion Fury. I don't think even he would have expected to be in the Springboks World Cup setup, let alone playing hooker again, let alone having to play 78 minutes of a World Cup final, let alone being on the field at the end to lift the trophy. Remarkable story. There were loads of great individual tales at the World Cup. We've mentioned a few of them there, a couple of the Portugal players in particular. But I'll go for Dion Fury because I don't think even he saw that one coming.
Yeah, two good ones. My unexpected hero is Alex Mitchell, England scrum half, who wasn't even in the original World Cup squad. Jack Van Portfleet drops out with an injury. He comes in and ends up being the first choice, and not just the first choice, but we know the type of game plan he can play with Northampton, but the way in which he fit into the England system, in particular in that semi-final, look at his box kicks that were on the money, he almost proved he could play a different type, perhaps more limiting in some ways, game plan. And now going into 2024, I think we'll probably feel he is England's number one, and scrum half is a position that we can expect to see change. Van Portfleet hopefully will come back from his injury. Do we see Danny Kerr again? Possibly not. Harry Randall at Bristol. I still think Raffy Quirk at Sale, if he can stay fit, is a real star for the future. But Alex Mitchell, for me, is a guy who's come out of 2023 of his stock very
nice
high.
Nice shout. Nice Good shout.
Out of your seat moment of 2023. I can go first here if you want,
yeah,
actually. I was trying to think, I was like, blimey, what am I out of my seat moment? I was thinking of the World Cup, and I'm actually going domestic for this one.
Okay.
Into the Gallagher Premiership. Do you remember it was actually the Harry Randall try, but it was set up by just...
Oh,
magic
Piatow.
From Charles Piatow,
yeah.
Against Northampton, yes. At Ashton Gate, where he catches the ball, beats a couple of men, kind of spins through a tackle, then does one of his ridiculous side steps to get round another, grubbers a little kick through that bounces up perfectly for Rand. It was just one of those moments you talk about rugby as a sport trying to sell itself.
Yeah,
it was just ridiculous. It gives people joy, that sort of moment. Oh. So the Charles Piatow try assist, really.
Yeah.
Is my out of your seat moment.
I thought when you started saying that, I thought your best moment of the year was having a shower in my hotel when you're living in a caravan in Marseille.
That was
much needed moment of the year, maybe.
So just to recap for the listeners that would have missed this, the opening weekend of the World Cup was like mid-30s, and I was sleeping in essentially a camper van in the car park, stadium car park in Marseille. Just
the glamour.
Sweaty and horrible. So before we did the ruck, I said, Will, can I have a shower at your hotel? And it was probably the most refreshing shower I've ever had. Yeah. So thank you once again for that, Will.
Unexpected hero. You could have had that, the shower in the Crown Plaza or whatever. I had sort of two that I thought of, and the one I'm not going to go for, but was my honourable mention, maybe doesn't define the out-of-the-seat moment because I was sitting down, but the final 10 minutes of England-South Africa, I remember talking about this on the podcast, I could feel the pulse in my neck because it was just so tense, especially the last bit when England were then behind and were like, are they going to set up for a drop goal? Maybe they're going to do it. And me and you are sitting there with Slotty just going, oh, wow, this would be insane. And they didn't do it, but it was like cripplingly tense. So that was one. But the one, and I mentioned it, I think I gave it my try of the year for the World Cup, which wasn't the try of the tournament, but I just really enjoyed Nicolas Sanchez nicking the ball off Sam Costello and running one in. And you've got the whole Pumas fans throwing their hands in the way they were doing and celebrating and winning that game. So that was out the seat for quite a lot of people, but I was sitting down again for that, but I enjoyed it immensely. That was great.
A couple of wow moments. When Fiji sort of rampaged clear of England at Twickenham in the warm-up. Now, I know it was only a World Cup warm-up game, but that was a wow moment of like, wow, Fiji are awesome, and wow, England are dreadful.
Yeah.
Like, how do they come back from here? And then they go on the journey they went on. I wish I'd been in Paris for those two quarterfinals, because had I been, then I think the first half of France, South Africa would be it. And I endorsed what Will says about the World Cup final. My first thought, And it's not an out-of-the-seat kind of spectacular moment, but it was the slow-burning tension of it. The unfolding of the Champions Cup final in Dublin was one of my highlights of the year. The noise inside that stadium generated by the Leinster fans was louder than the Ireland fans had generated on the Grand Slam day against England. The atmosphere was incredible. And for La Rochelle to come back and to win it at the death, it was just... Sometimes emotion takes over, but I still feel now as I felt then, which is that it was the best European Champions Cup final there'd been. And so for all the wonderful moments at the World Cup, a couple of the games I wish I'd been at, that's the one that leapt to my mind first.
Okay, for a final award, hope for 2024. For me, this was quite an easy one, actually. And again, I'm going domestic rugby.
Okay.
And it is an away semi-final win in the Premiership.
Okay.
I feel like every season we get to the top two and there's always this great battle for third and fourth, and it never really matters because they have to go to the Stonex or up to Sale. Yeah. And it's so difficult, as we know. The percentage of wins for away teams is tiny. I think it'd be great for the league if we could get an away semi-final win.
And who are you backing to do that,
Alfie? Oh, blimey, Will.
Bristol
probably. Yeah. Get every other award that he comes up with.
Bloody Bristolians. Call the Bears.
It won't be Bristol. I'm pretty confident on that. I don't know, Will, actually. I think we're going to have another season where I think the top two will be relatively comfortable and it will be a bum fight.
Northampton beat Saracens away fairly recently.
Yeah, which could be
I think you're looking at Northampton or Quinns to be the away team that wins. Mm,
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah,
okay. Both could do it, and Quinns beat Sale recently. Quinns beat Sale, but it was at the Stoop.
Home, but yeah.
Interesting, yeah. So my hope for 2024, which is possibly teeing up 2025, is that Australia get their act together. What a terrible year it's been for Australia.
You feel sorry for them.
Just
do, anyway.
A total disaster. Loads of it self-inflicted, so maybe don't feel that sorry for them, to be honest, because
I feel sorry for the fans and the players.
Yeah. You've got players going back to rugby league. You've got Eddie Jones, now the Japan coach. What a disaster that was, the whole tenure of him as a Wallabies coach. The Lions tour is in 2025. Everyone needs and wants that to be brilliant. So can the Wallabies sort their lives out? And as a little flick, here you go. This is based on no information at all, but here's a theory. What about a dream coaching team for the Wallabies of Joe Schmidt and Mike Catt? Mike Catt leaving Ireland after the Six Nations. I was just thinking about this the other day, and this is not based on information, but that would be quite good. And then that would really quite sell the Lions tour, wouldn't it? Joe Schmidt against Andy Farrell.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool, wouldn't it? With Mike Catt, his old number two, coaching the Wallabies against the Lions. There you go.
I like that.
Nice, Alex.
So come on, Ozzy, sort your lives out.
I would like to spend 2024 writing positive, upbeat, interesting, insightful pieces about England and English rugby. And despite all our best efforts, that it has been incredibly difficult to do. If I was just looking back at some of the things that we'd done in 2023, in a year where England reached the World Cup semi-final, and yet, you know, I mentioned the Fiji game earlier, the Six Nations before that was two wins from five for the third year running. The RFU's leadership is constantly under scrutiny for and not for good reasons. My dream is that this new plan that the RFU are trying to pull together with the Premiership works brilliantly. The players are given their head. That we see some of the rugby being played in the Premiership translate into the England team in an effective way so that it drives up interest and excitement in the team. Yes, it's about winning, but England need to win hearts and minds as much as rugby matches at the moment. And while Will and I are here, our job is to challenge and to scrutinise. English rugby's been in a funk for too long, and it's just a general hope that a sport that offers so many people so much can engage and inspire and excite in a way that it hasn't enough of late.
I thought I'd had a good one with a away semi-final win, but Alex is, I think...
Mic drop there, yeah. Look at that.
Trump me.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Made mine look trivial in comparison.
I'm trying to think what I said a year ago. Did I say a year ago, I hope that World Rugby don't act like dictators over online clips and that everyone can share the sport?
Oh, maybe, not sure.
Only for that to not come true.
I think you said that the World Cup lived up to what we hope it would be.
Yeah.
I think.
Another very general... vague...
state of the game.
Oh, well, I'll carry on.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Get more fun for me, Alex is basically saying.
Entertain me. Perfect. Well, have a great 2024, everyone. We'll be with you every step of the way, every Monday with a ruck, looking back on the weekend, talking about all the major talking points that there are to cover in the game of rugby. So thank you for being with us. We hope you have a brilliant year. Will, Alex, looking forward to it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, my vision. I'm looking forward to my vision of 2024.
Yeah, the Alex Lowe's. Awesome. Yeah. I think we did 52 pods in 2023. It's a good effort. I know others do more, but that's pretty good for
Not bad for a weekly pod.
There you go. But we had a whole month off in the summer, didn't we? We did two a week during the World Cup with all the specials and all that.
Yeah, no, it's been fun, and I'm looking forward to whatever the next year holds. So thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast. Follow us wherever you get your podcast from. Leave a review as well. We'll see you next week.